Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, let's talk about our shaman columnist, who is also a gigantic aficionado of lore, and that would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Hopefully everybody's having a great week and not learning about mud people like I did.
Mud people?
My car got stuck in what I can only refer to as the only inner city swamp I have ever seen.
Wow.
It was enough mud that it actually took my car down to the frame, and ooh, it took two tow trucks and a winch to get me out.
Dang, Joe.
Yep, that was my experience with mudding.
You're not out in the boonies either, are you?
No, I'm in a major metropolitan area.
What is this freak sinkhole stuff, man?
Yes.
Is your car all right?
About $1,000 later. Yeah, it's okay.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'd ask if you were okay, but you're here, so obviously you are. So.
Yeah, I was more annoyed than anything.
Okay, then. All right. Our second co-host, obviously, y'all know him really well. He'd be the other lore-focused writer at Blizzard Watch and also writes a bunch of other stuff for us as well, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hey, everybody.
You haven't sunk into any sinkholes lately, have you?
No. I did spend, some time this week in Nighthold.
Oh, okay.
There's a fight in there where you fight a giant robot who is trying to kill you with cake.
Yes, I love that fight. I love that fight so much.
I just wanted to tell people that fight exists. There is a fight where, no lie, a giant robot attempts to kill you with cake. And you have to eat all the deadly, deadly cake, because if you don't, robots will come and eat it and explode. You don't want the robots to eat the cake and explode. You want the robots to eat the goo on the floor that you can't stand in. This is something that the freaking Nightborn built. I seriously question their entire civilization now.
This sounds like a raid version of the Van Cleef, or not the Van Cleef fight, the Murloc fight right before it with the Murloc and the cauldron.
Yes, it is very much like Cookie.
Yeah.
Except it's one of those fights where you sit and look at it and you realize that this robot is actually having an identity crisis, and it's phenomenal.
I haven't had the chance to pop into LFR just yet, but I plan on doing that later today, actually, after we're done with the show. So hopefully I get to witness all this madness for myself.
I thought the second fight was going to be the weirdest fight in the instance. I honestly thought the time aberration boss was going to be the weirdest fight. We get through that fight and we end up going upstairs to giant cake robot. And I was like, all right.
Nope.
Y'all are just.
Yep.
This civilization needed to be toppled because y'all are building robots that go nuts and try and kill people with cake. So, yeah.
All I know is the first three fights are in a sewer, and it's a giant scorpion, we're basically fighting against time itself, and then cake robot. And it was the best introduction to a raid I've had in probably a decade. I loved it.
I like how it doesn't matter where we're at. We always have to bust in through the sewer. Because we did that with, like,
That's Black action Temple movie 101, man.
Throne of Thunder actually let you come in the front door and then made you go through the sewer.
Yeah, yeah.
This time they're just straight up getting the sewer out of the way. It's like Black Temple, where it's just starting the sewers and move your way up.
It's pretty much, it's like, well, we can't go through the front door, so let's just go in through the sewer pipes. And Black Temple, we had to go through the sewer pipes. Throne of Thunder, it was like, we launched that assault at the front door, and then we got dropped into the sewers because Blizzard just said, nope, you're not getting out of the sewer level. There's an obligatory sewer level. Yeah. Anyway, so this week we're going to actually, we have a couple of emails and they kind of tie into each other. This is a topic that we've talked about before. We've talked about Jaina Proudmoore before, and we're going to talk about her more in depth today because we've talked about her from the perspective of saying that she should be in Legion and it's weird that she's not in Legion, but I don't think that we've ever really done any kind of deep dive into her progression as a character from like where she started to where she's what she's become now. And it's been probably one of the biggest dramatic arcs in Warcraft's history. There have been other characters that have had that same kind of, you know, swing, but I don't think any of them have ever been quite as dramatic as Jaina's. So the first email that we've got here is says, "Hey, lore gods, I was reading the Know Your Lore dangling plot threads in WoW today, and two things kind of connected in my mind. Do you think Jaina could be trying to find a weapon to fight the Burning Legion? She doesn't seem like someone who would sit back and just let things that took place in Dalaran slide. It'd be really cool if, in the final hour, towards the end of the expansion, if she showed up and helped save the day." And I think we kind of have to talk about that a little bit, because, yeah, it's very much in Jaina's character not to let stuff like that slide. Jaina's kind of stubborn, and she started out as the daughter of Grand Admiral Daylan Proudmoore. So, I mean, she was born into kind of a quasi-nobility thing.
Oh, no, there's no quasi about it. She was considered royalty because he was a lord. He was not just a Grand Admiral.
Lord
Admiral.
He was
actually a lord, so he was royalty.
He was the ruler of Kul Tiras, basically. The only reason I say quasi is because Kul Tiras has been like useful in the Warcraft universe and you know, it was a member of the Seven Kingdoms and everything. I don't think it was quite as involved with the whole political situation anywhere near as much as, say, I don't know, Lordaeron or Gilneas or any of the landlocked.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. It was very much Kul Tiras that fought the First Horde Dragon Riders.
True.
And it was very much Kul Tiras Kul Tiras is the one that essentially, I was just reading this too. This is what bugs me, is my brain is like Swiss cheese the past few days for reasons. I was reading the bit about when Daylan's son, not Tancred, the one that's established in lore, was leading. He was on one ship and he basically bought
Derek.
He bought his father time to fight the dragons off. With his life, he sacrificed himself and his ship to do it, because the dragon just came up and was just destroying the ship, and they couldn't fight it off in time. And it was his sacrifice and the help of the dwarves was what, you know, basically taught the Alliance, this is how you fight these things. You have to fight them from the air. You need Griffin Riders. You can't possibly stop them from the ground because they just won't come down.
And this is pretty much, I mean, this is all early in Jaina's life because she remembers her brother. She knew her brother, obviously. She was saddened when he died, but she was very young at that point. So,
well, it's like, how far between the First and Second War? And the Second War and the Third War? Second War is like, what, almost 20 years between the Second and Third? Or is it just 10?
I can't remember.
It's a big chunk of time.
It was a sizable chunk of time.
I think it's a decade, I think. That sounds about right.
Yeah. First War and the Fall of Stormwind was like years 3 and 5. And then the Second War began in year 6. So the orcs kind of ramped up their attack right away. But that war, if I remember correctly, the Second War, it actually stretched on for a fairly
lengthy period of time, isn't it?
Yeah. Destruction of Draenor was year 8. And that was when Draenor was shattered. And we had like all the people that were on the other side of the portal were lost. The new horde, Thrall, didn't break out of the internment camps or anything until 10 years after that. So he was pretty much like born just before that defeat, because he rose to leadership at age, I think he was 18, 19, when he became the leader of the Horde, which is kind of incomprehensible again, but he was very young when he took up that mantle.
So Jaina would have been, if we assume Jaina was born like a year zero, which I don't know that she was, but
no, I think she was older than that.
A little. If she's like six when the Second War starts, she would have been like 8 to 10 when her brother died. It depends.
Yeah, but she was old enough to remember it, and she was old enough to remember him. So her life kind of started, like, a lot of her formative memories were, you know, put against this backdrop of these wars that were going on. Beyond that, and on top of that, she's also quite bright. She was a really smart kid, and she spent a lot of time reading, got really, really interested in all of the tales of the Guardian Aegwynn, and that kind of spurred her onward so that, you know, the moment that she showed any kind of magical aptitude, she was sent to Dalaran, and from there, she pretty much badgered Antonidas nonstop into taking her on as his personal apprentice.
Which is super important to note, not only because it shows her character is really like the stubbornness of her character, because she would not take no, but she was one of the few female wizards at the time basically serving Dalaran. So she was
in that
not
kind
only,
of direct capacity. Yeah.
So she helped pave the way for and I hate to say it like it, but it really is. She helped pave the way for, you know, the fact of Dalaran and the mages orders in general just having sorceresses, really.
Lots of them. Lots and lots of them, because she was arguably one of the most powerful to develop out of Dalaran. I believe she's right now she's considered probably the most powerful human sorceress alive at this point. Human. Keep in mind, we're talking human here. We're not talking about elves, because the elves are on a different plane of existence altogether here.
Yeah, but honestly, aside from one sorceress who isn't even an elf anymore, I can't think of any elf that could tank her. There's no established in lore right now elf character who wields magic that is in her league, and I mean I'm including like Ramath, because she took out Sunchaser with contemptuous ease.
Yeah,
she didn't just beat him, she slapped him like a small child who'd put on daddy's pants that
We're getting way too far forward here, but
I'm just
regardless,
saying, you know,
the whole point here
Jaina is a power.
Yeah, the
oh,
whole
yeah, she
point
is, she
here is.
Is
that Jaina was a powerhouse even when she was young. And not only was she a powerhouse, she was also really determined to see the things that she wanted to see come to fruition actually happen. So she worked really hard when she was in Dalaran, and she worked really hard to become the best apprentice that she could. And she made sure that, you know, when she got there, that she was studying under the very best teacher that she could possibly find. And who better than the leader of the Kirin Tor, you know?
And that was a big deal. When
it was a very big deal, because Antonidas did not take apprentices usually.
He'd rejected several people. Who
so
were
many,
like, you know.
But beyond that, and besides that, we do have that whole royal connection where Jaina was the daughter of a prominent figure and a ruler of one of the Seven Kingdoms. So Jaina had ties to royalty, whether or not she chose to accept them or chose to, like, embrace them with the same kind of fervor as maybe anybody else in her position. That also brought her close together with Arthas, because Arthas was Taranis's son. He was a prince. And obviously, Arthas is going to have to get married at some point. But these two met when they were very young, and they actually became pretty close friends. Arthas sort of appreciated the fact that she wasn't, I wouldn't say she wasn't a girly girl, because she probably was, but that she expressed a lot more interest in, like, the whole adventuring and checking things out and exploring and that kind of thing. He volunteered to escort her to Dalaran. And while they were on their way to Dalaran, he actually took her out. They snuck out late at night to go see one of the internment camps where the Alliance had actually, like, put all the orcs in forced imprisonment. And she saw that, and she was kind of horrified at the idea, because she was like, what about the baby orcs? What about the kid orcs? What about, and Arthas is like, well, they're just orcs. And she's like, well, yeah, but, and that, I think that was kind of the beginnings of that whole spark of diplomacy that she later demonstrated with the Horde. Like, that was part of the reason why she felt sort of connected to Thrall right off the bat, was just those origins of where he had come from. She had seen those, you know, in her youth, and she'd been exposed to that in her youth. Anyway, Arthas and Jaina, do either of you guys want to tackle that? Because that was kind of, that went weird places.
Well, what do you mean by tackle it? Talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, talk about it.
The first time they met, obviously, like you just pointed out, they became friends fairly quickly. One of the things that I was reading Arthas the other day, one of the problems Arthas had growing up was that relatively few people would talk to him like a person. Because
he was always your highness or, you know, your grace, blah, blah.
He'd witnessed his sister. There's actually an interesting point in the book where he witnesses his sister absolutely terrified and distraught because they're going to marry her off to some noble she's never even heard of, some guy named Davil Prester, who's supposed to be from Northaron, wherever the heck that is. And he's supposedly related to the, you know, Prester line, and he's going to be king of Alterac, and she's going to be married to him. And she's like, I don't even know this guy. I don't want to marry him. I've never even heard of him. And her father was basically going to force her into it, and she was so terrified and distraught. And Arthas witnessed it, and he's like, I don't know. As a paladin, this is, I mean, I can't do anything, but it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel just. And that was a thing that, you know, when he met Jaina, there's somebody who isn't going to be forced into anything, you know, someone who wasn't going, she was going to go study magic, and there was none of that problem, like none of that, you know, none of that forced nature of it, which I think helped their relationship. I think that's one of the things he liked about
her. She had that spark of stubbornness, and I think he kind of appreciated that spark of stubbornness.
Well, yeah, because he never got challenged, and she would challenge him. I hate to say it, like that's a trope, but it fits so well in that, because when you're royalty in those classic stories, everybody just bows to your whim like 99% of the time.
Yeah, growing up. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, but then like, here's this person who's going to, she's going to go, nah, I don't feel like it. Peace.
Like there are two people that Arthas was really close friends with his own age or close to his own age. One of them was Varian, who came to Lordaeron basically with nothing.
And Varian was older than him, but not by much. He was a few years older, but it was like, oh, a boy my age, like a prince, somebody who understands the situation I'm in. So yeah, naturally the two of them kind of bonded together over that.
And
but
one of the things that, you know, in that situation, one of the reasons Arthas became close to him was because Varian had seen so much more than Arthas. He'd been through the loss of his kingdom, and he was much more dedicated to combat than Arthas was. Arthas actually lost constantly trying to spar with Varian. He couldn't beat him. He couldn't even come close.
He was still learning at that point, yeah. And Varian had been learning
from Anduin Lothar.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
for a lot longer.
The dude's teacher is Anduin Lothar. It's not surprising. Arthas's trainers had all been just people they hired. It was just a different world. And with Jaina, this was somebody who didn't even care about that sort of thing, knights and chivalry and all that. She was going to go off and learn magic and be, you know, at Dalaran. And she, you know, she grew up in the same basic position of privilege as him. Like, for all that they weren't called kings, you know, the Proudmoors were the unquestioned rulers of Kul Tiras.
I think the only reason that they weren't called, he wasn't called a king, was just because it was a naval kingdom.
Yeah, the title of admiral basically meant king. If you were the admiral of Kul Tiras, you were its ruler. They didn't need to be kings. But that their meeting kind of shapes both of them in different directions. Like, he doesn't agree with her about the whole orc thing. He doesn't like absorb that, but he witnesses it, and he kind of caroms off in a different direction. Like, it's fascinating to watch the way the two of them played off of each other and went their own separate ways. They for all that they had a romantic feelings for each other at a young age, they both knew what they wanted.
They were very determined to get what they wanted too.
And there was none of that, you know, oh, we'll be torn apart. There was, well, maybe I'll see you in a few years. We'll see what happens.
It was kind of an amicable parting, as it were. All of this information, by the way, is available in the novel Arthas by Christy Golden, which I highly recommend reading if you want any kind of backstory into Arthas, but also Jaina as well, because both of them
are super intertwined. Yeah.
Yeah. Their fates are really kind of intertwined. And a lot of the story, there are flashbacks or flash forwards, I guess, to Jaina, because she's remembering all of this stuff in the wake of Wrath of the Lich King.
I would also say that with Jaina and Arthas, one of the reasons that Arthas stuck out in Jaina's life was that a lot of the other people in her life were basically, you know, either her family or when she goes to the Cirin Tor, they're all Cirin Tor mages. And they're kind of, there's not really a polite way to put this. their heads are up their own asses. That's just straight up. That's how they are. They don't care at all about things that really concern Jaina. Like, not just the orc thing. Justice in general is important to Jaina. Things of being... Jaina's one of those people. She's young. She's extremely young. She's, like, between 16 and 20 when the Third War comes up. She's young enough that she's still very idealistic, and fairness is important to her in a way that, you know... It's very hard to get Antonidas worked up over unfairness. The guy is in his 80s. He's seen everything. And, you know, Kel'Thuzad is, you know, he's turning rats into, like, moving corpses in warehouses. That dude's not worrying too much about unfairness. Kael'thas is basically creeping on her at this time.
Super creeping on her, yeah.
Yeah, we should... I want to go back a little bit, though, to the whole Jaina and Arthas thing, because this all kind of culminates before the Third War.
All I'm saying is that the other people in her life don't give her, like, they're not engaging with her. They're kind of like, they talk to her station, or they talk to her power.
But they don't talk to her as a human being.
There's not a lot of people who are like, you know, hey, Jaina, no, that's silly. Come on.
Arthas very much talked to her like she was a human being, because she talked to him like he was a human being. And they had that kind of mutual understanding. And that did blossom. It blossomed into romance, and they had a relationship, and they were actually engaged. They were engaged, and they were going to be married. And at some point, Arthas got cold feet, and he kind of backed out because he realized that this was moving maybe a little too fast for him, and that there were still things that he wanted to accomplish, and he knew that there were still things that Jaina wanted to accomplish, and neither one of them would be able to accomplish any of it if they stepped into this position of royal wedded couple.
What's really interesting about that, though, too, is that decision right there is such a defining decision for the rest of the story, because it's a what-if scenario. What if he hadn't gotten cold feet? What would have happened after that? Would the events that played out after that still occurred? And it's always interesting to me that noblest of gestures that he made may have potentially been the start of that downfall, and it centered around his desire to make the best decision for not just himself, but for this person he cared about a great deal. Like, it's interesting because it's a moment of, I don't want to say like cliche chivalrous self-sacrifice, but it kind of is. And it made all the difference in the world.
And I think it also made a difference later on, too, because they parted ways, and it was kind of amicable. Jaina's heart was a little broken. She understood kind of the cold logic behind the decision, but her heart still hurt, you know, from it. And they went their separate ways. She went on to, you know, continue studying at Dalaran under Antonidas. And when the Third War, the Scourge began to pop up, she was sent to go reunite with Arthas. And this was that whole mission in Warcraft 3 where the two of them had to travel together to kind of see what the source of all of this was and try and ferret things out. And when they met back up again, it was kind of awkward initially, but they very quickly fell right back into the couple that they had been, and they got together. And then as that journey went on, it became clearer and clearer that Arthas wasn't quite the same person that she had fallen in love with. Like, he had changed. There was something in him that had changed, and it wasn't for the better. And that all kind of culminated when they got to Stratholme. And I don't know, Rossi, you want to talk about what happened at Stratholme?
Well, I think we kind of need to talk about what they saw first, because to put it in brief, when they started traveling through Northern Lordaeron, keep in mind, Northern Lordaeron was both rural and somewhat distant from, you know, the political power in the south. Lordaeron City was in the south, and it was near the water, not on the water, but near it. It was a trade-oriented place. It faced Gilneas. It was right next to the Gilneas border. There was a lot of, you know, the southern people looked downward and towards other nations. In the north, you know, your only neighbors were, like, you know, the elves who never talked to you, angry trolls who occasionally attacked you, and they were a self-sufficient people. So when they went silent, this is the breadbasket of the kingdom. When they went silent, it was a concern. It was like, what's going on up there?
It was Jaina, weird.
Yeah. Jaina went up with him, and at first they actually did seem to rekindle things. Like, it was very much like a, you know, I'm the prince now. You've reached a very strong position in Lordaeron. I'm a paladin. I mean, in Dalaran, and I'm a paladin. We've achieved kind of what we wanted. Maybe things can go forward now. But soon the first thing they discovered was this plague, which was unlike anything they'd ever seen. This is, necromancy isn't new. It's not like something no one had ever heard of, but nobody had ever seen anything like this.
No, and it was not something that was studied or encouraged to be studied. I mean, Kel'Thuzad was sent away.
Yeah.
Was pretty much banished because of it.
People who messed around with necromancy, just a little of it, got banished from the Kirin Tor or dealt with. And this was way bigger than that. This was way bigger than some troll witch doctor doing a little, talking to the Loa and doing a little voodoo or whatever they call it in the game. It was very much a very big deal.
Oh, and yeah. I mean, you're reanimating corpses from other corpses, like pieces of other corpses. Like, this is a big thing.
And very quickly, it became apparent that Arthas took every setback seriously. More than that, he took them personally. And they were being taunted. Like, several times, Kel'Thuzad or a minion of his would taunt them. You know, there's nothing you can do to stop us. We'll beat you to the next place. And when they
the usual.
When they got to Bryl, Bryl is important. If you've ever been to Bryl in game, they got to Bryl and everybody was already dead. And it's like, what do we do? Then they go to Anderhal and the granaries in Anderhal, which, if you ever did the vanilla quest with the time bugs, they were messing around with the granaries too. That was the first sign that the Infinite Dragonflight might be trying to figure out something about Arthas. The whole area, they realized not just are people poisoned in these towns, everybody who's eaten grain from Anderhal is going to get this plague because the entire granary is plagued.
And Anderhal was the supplier for the entirety of Lordaeron.
The kingdom got its grain from Anderhal. Anderhal was where it was all brought. It was effectively like a tithe barn. And so, they ran to Stratholme because that was the closest major city. And Stratholme was a big deal. It was in its way as big and powerful as Lordaeron. It was a major city. So they ran to it as fast as they could, and they got there. It was too late. And Arthas basically started to snap. And she could see it.
Yeah, they initially, they were trying to get back to figure out what was going on. And they stopped. They stopped at Hearthglen.
Yeah, they stopped at Hearthglen too. But that's why they got jumped by the scourge there.
Yeah, they stopped at Hearthglen and they realized that Anderhal's grain had already gotten to Hearthglen and it had been distributed and people were eating it and they were transforming, right before their eyes. And Jaina took off to go find Uther for reinforcements because at that point it became eminently clear that this was something way bigger than just her and Arthas could handle. By the time she got back with the Silver Hand, Hearthglen was pretty much destroyed and Arthas was fighting a battle that he could not win. And they managed to get out of there with Uther's help. But at the same time, it was like that was their first sight, I think. And that first mental picture of exactly how widespread this thing was and exactly, how horrifying this thing was that was going on. And that's when they took off for Stratholme, because Stratholme was one of the biggest cities there beyond, I think, Lordaeron itself, really. Yeah. Well, capital city.
Yeah, like Lordaeron City was the biggest, but Stratholme is right up there.
It's right up there with it. Yeah.
Just look at it in game, even. It's big enough to have, multiple areas to it. It was a large city.
And something happened. Something started to happen to Arthas where he kind of began to lose it a little bit. He was on this quest, this single-minded determination quest to make all of this horrible stuff stop at any cost. And that started getting bigger and bigger. And when they got to Stratholme's gates and he saw that the townsfolk had been eating the grain already, he knew that it was Hearthglen part two. And he said, we need to purge the city before all of these people turn. We need to purge the city. And Jaina was pretty horrified because who knew how many people in there actually ate the grain and who knew how many people in there hadn't touched it. They had no way to tell. And they also hadn't looked into any kind of cure or solution for the plague itself. And that was something that Jaina wanted to check out because, if they could cure all of these people, then everything would be okay again. Arthas didn't even want to wait for that.
It's the classic military mentality versus the science mentality. Like in the zombie apocalypse movies, the army doesn't care about, curing the people, it cares about stopping the plague or the advancement of the disease that's going on. And that's very much where Arthas's head was at, because he's looking at it from like a king would almost. He has to take decisive action based off of what he sees. And he sees that this is spreading so quickly that they don't have time to wait and study this and figure out what's going on.
And to be fair to him, I mean, as you just pointed out, he'd been through half of these towns already. He'd been to Hearthglen and seen everybody in Hearthglen just turn into monstrosities.
Like, and shortly after they got there too. Like, it wasn't like it was a slow thing. It was like,
and
they got there, saw the grain, and boom.
Yeah, and he knew as a paladin he couldn't cure this. The Holy Light wasn't going to fix it. He tried. So his decision is understandable given the threat and the scale, but it's also monstrous. And that's one of those situations where it's kind of like, we have this going on in the Legion right now where Zara's constantly going, what would you have done when showing us Illidan stuff? But it's really hard to go back. When you do Culling a Strathalm, it's hard to know what he should have done. It's hard to come up with a really good solution. And Jaina was in a worse position because all she had was objections. She couldn't give him a solution.
No, that's all she could do is protest. She couldn't do anything else. And Uther had authority, but Arthas pretty much stripped him of that authority by just right of succession and his sovereignty to the crown. Arthas made a proclamation and said, yeah, I relieve you of your command and everything else. And everybody who is loyal to the crown, stay here and follow me. And then he turned to Jaina and he said, Jaina, because he expected Jaina to go with him. And all she could say was, I'm sorry, Arthas, I can't watch you do this. And she left. And I think that was probably, like, her heart broke a little when he broke off that engagement. But I think right here is the very clear, pivotal moment where she realized that they were going down two very, very different paths. And whatever path Arthas had gone down after he broke off that engagement, it was not one that she was willing to follow or even stand by his side with. He turned into almost a different human being, and it wasn't a human being that she liked. He set them both free, in essence, to pursue their own interests, but those interests didn't cleave together as much as maybe she initially thought that they would. And that's where that's where her story, dramatically diverges from Arthas's, because she returns, she leaves, and she goes to return to Dalaran, and she's visited by a mysterious prophet. And this prophet had actually visited King Taranis and Antonidas, both in turn. She overheard the conversation with Antonidas, and she brought it up with Antonidas, and Antonidas was like, it's nothing to worry about. Don't think about it. Well, the prophet came to her this time and said, look, you need to take all of the people that you can. You need to take all of the survivors that you can, and you need to leave. You need to sail across the ocean, and you need to go to Kalimdor. If you want to survive and you want your people to survive, this is what you need to do. And Jaina said, okay. Because what else did she have at that point?
Yeah, she couldn't get, she couldn't get anyone to listen to her.
No.
Antonidas wasn't listening to her. Her mentor wasn't listening to her. Akir and Tork very clearly were going to just stick their heads, we know where I say they stick them, and ignore the whole issue. So she basically, at this point, she could have tried to go home and get her father to listen, but she knew her father. That wasn't going to work. So she
It wasn't an immediate decision because, she thought it over, and the more she thought about it, the more it made sense. And then Arthas and the Scourge began that invasion of Dalaran. And that's when both Jaina and Antonidas realized, no, this is real. Like, this is very, very real, and we need to go. Like, Antonidas turned to her and said, take as many survivors as you can. Get out. Go. And she took her people, and she took all of the survivors of Kul Tiras that she could with her, too. Like, she took an entire naval force from Kul Tiras with her. Daddy would not let her go alone. And I think, I don't know what Daelin Proudmoore was up to during that time period, because I don't think that was ever really clearly defined. All I know is that her father did not go with her on that initial journey to Kalimdor, but he did show up later. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Jaina, however, Jaina, I think Jaina at that point, she realized that there was nothing left for her in the Eastern Kingdoms. And the only way to achieve any kind of safety was to put her trust in this absolute stranger, this prophet that she didn't know, take him at his word, do what he and her mentor had both said, and, you know, flee. So she did. And Arthas and the Scourge and everything else was kind of just a memory that she left behind. She might have thought about him at points after that. She might have wondered what had happened to him at points after that. But her focus was very clearly elsewhere. And, you know, maybe that's kind of reflective of her stubbornness, too, where she's like, I need this situation to work. And this was the only way that she had for it to work. Joe, you got any thoughts on this? I'm doing a lot of talking here. So
no, you're covering it pretty well. I mean, everything she has decided to do is indicative of her, the characteristics of her personality. And that's one of the things that I do love about her character, even like just to jump ahead a little bit, not to go too far, but every decision she seems to make is in line with that mentality. Everything we've seen from, you know, way, way back early days to current, she's stubborn. She knows what she needs to do. She knows what she wants to do. She knows what needs to happen. She has a very clear line to walk. In her mind, she has a very clear line to walk. And whether that line is shifted left or right based on what happens around her, she knows what the next step is. That's who she is. She's a, you know, and that's one of the things I've always loved about her character. And we'll get more into that later when we start talking about some of the later stuff, but it's one of the defining characteristics of her character in particular that I love compared to many of the other NPCs that seem to be, you know, wishy-washy or are kind of characters that have these massive turns. Jaina is always Jaina is always Jaina, and I dig it.
She has a stubbornness, and I know we've talked about this stubbornness, but she's also got kind of a nurturing personality in some ways. Like, she wants to take care of people, and she wants to make sure that people are okay.
I'm gonna outright object to the word stubbornness, because I feel like it's stubbornness not, is somebody stubbornness, doesn't it's
decisive. Like, yeah. She's decisive.
She's decisive. She doesn't flip flop around. She sees a course of action. She knows what she thinks is best. She knows what's right from wrong, and she stays the course. And go ahead, Rossi. I'm sorry.
Well, one of the reasons I've gone back and forth on the whole Jaina thing a few times with people who are always like, why do you keep bringing Jaina up when you talk about Legion? It's like, well, one of the reasons is because she's a Warcraft 3 character.
Yeah.
And the Warcraft 3 characters tended to get a little bit more depth. Like, some of my favorite characters are from Warcrafts 1 and 2. I mean, I'm a huge Tal'Ralian and Illaria fan. I love Lothar. But the thing about Jaina is she grew up in a world after the invasion. She grew up in a world where the orcs were now a thing that you had to know about and deal
with. She didn't know what the world was before orcs were in it.
Yeah, she is a child of the world of the war, like the world the war made. And in a way, you know, she reminds me of us, because we all grew up in a post-World War II world. Like, everything had changed and we had to grow up and deal with it. And that made her more approachable to me than the characters who fought in that first war. The other thing about her that I've always liked is that she isn't just stubborn, because stubbornness is a refusal to change when exposed to facts. When facts change, you don't change. That's what stubbornness is to me. Jaina is, you know, obdurate, but in a like literally, she has fortitude. She sticks up for what she believes in. She isn't blind about
it. She will hold her own ground.
Yeah, you can't just push her with like loudness. No. You can't get her to like change her opinion just because you
shout. There's probably a better word than stubborn.
Well, the example, I mean, we're still talking about like the war. We need to kind of move forward, because the crowning example of Jaina's character and how willing she is to stand up for what she believes is what happens with her father after
when she gets to Kalimdor. And yeah, they arrived on Kalimdor, she and the people that she took with her. They arrived on Kalimdor and they found orcs waiting for them. They clashed with Grom Hellscream and his troops several times over, I think. And
they fought with the Night Elves.
Fought with the Night Elves too. There was a lot of, it was not an easy transition by any stretch of the imagination. And Jaina decided that she needed to go find this crazy prophet, the one that had sent her there to begin with, because obviously, you know, she was sent there for a reason, but she didn't know what that reason was. So she went to Stone Talon Peak because it was, you know, an easily defended area. And also she could sense that there was some kind of really big power going on over there. She didn't know what it was exactly, but she wanted to find out. And once she got there, that's when she met Thrall and she met Cairn. And that's also when she met the prophet, and he revealed himself, and it's flippin' Medivh. It's the son of the guardian that she grew up reading about. The woman who pretty much, you know, shaped the path of Jaina's life without even realizing it. It was just these tales and things that got Jaina fascinated with magic. Here's Medivh, living legend, right in front of her. What does he say? You guys need to work together because the Burning Legion is coming. And he brings in the Night Elves too and says, okay, all you guys, all y'all, you got to work together. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that, Rossi?
Well, and one of the interesting things about the whole thing is Jaina is often depicted as a peacemaker, and she is kind of a peacemaker, but she's not the kind of peacemaker who's like, let's all just get along. She flat out, she gets up and Thrall in Cairn's faces. If you actually like look at Warcraft 3, she's like very much, you know, I'll work with you, but I'm not a fool. Don't trifle with me. And later events would prove that that's a good warning. You don't trifle with Jaina Proudmoore. But when they all get to the prophet, there's this whole thing involving an ancient dead elven princess, which is actually very interesting if you know like stuff about elven history, but it doesn't come in here. They deal with that. They get through to Stone Talon. They meet up with the prophet. He throws back his cloak and he's all, surprise, I'm Medivh. And everyone's like, what? I think Thrall's like, who? And Cairn's like, I don't know who you are either. And Jaina's like, Medivh, what the heck are you doing here? And he basically,
I think Medivh was, or Jaina was pretty much the only person that recognized the name, really, or that would recognize the name.
But I mean, to be fair, that's kind of the important part, because of all the people involved, that's where the weight needs to be carried. Because, you know, if you're in her position and you're growing up with like these wars with, you know, the orcs and the, you know, this established horde is now in opposition to your alliance or whatever, like you have this tension there, and maybe they're a little more likely on the Horde side to listen to Magic Birdman, where, you know, he doesn't want to kill us outright. Maybe we should listen to him. Okay, we can talk here. This is fine. Because, I mean, look at it's Thrall and Cairn, two of the most level-headed leaders the Horde have ever had. They're going to listen to reason before war because that's just how they are. They would rather avoid conflict and bloodshed. So he doesn't have to impress super upon them that, I am this big, important figure from your history. Ha-ha! Whereas with the humans, with everything that's happened, that's where the weight needs to lie. So revealing himself at that moment, specifically for Jaina, makes the most sense. Like, it makes sense.
And to be clear here, Thrall was not a typical orc, not by any stretch of the imagination. He'd been raised in the internment camps, the ones that Jaina saw when she was little.
I'm sorry. I have to say this. I'm so sorry.
Go ahead.
He not that kind of orc.
He not that kind of orc. No, not at all. He was raised by humans, and he was raised to be a gladiator. But as he was, you know, being trained to fight and all this other stuff, he had outside forces. He had Taretha and he had Sargent, who were teaching him concepts like honor. They were teaching him to read. They gave him books. They taught him a very human way of thinking. And when Thrall broke out of those internment camps and went and found Grom Hellscream, Grom's first reaction was, what are you? Because this was not, I mean, Thrall was speaking of honor and stuff like the kind of values that the orcs cleave to, but he was speaking about them from a very human perspective. It made Thrall a really weird character, but it also made him relatable in a way to Jaina. And he was pretty much the best leader that the Horde could have had at the time, because just by merit of who he was, how he was raised, how he was born, he was in a position where he could say, okay, let's go ahead and work with these humans, and everybody would follow him. Of course they're going to follow him. He broke them out of the internment camps. He set them all free. They're going to follow him.
Yeah, he broke. It's interesting because Thrall, it's also that upbringing that makes Thrall somebody who could reach out to like trolls and Tauren.
Yeah.
Because orcs are not, before Thrall, orcs do not go around making alliances. The closest
have diplomats per se.
The closest they ever came to that was, we beat some ogres up and now they'll do what we tell them.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, suddenly it was, we can work together and form bonds of mutual brotherhood. And other orcs are like,
the story of Thrall.
He's saying it.
Yeah, the story of Thrall and how he broke out of the internment camps and all this stuff about Taratha and Sargent. There's two places you can catch up on that. One of them is the novel Lord of the Clans, which was just re-released. It's also by Christy Golden. I think it's the first one that she wrote, actually, for Blizzard. It's really good. And the other place that you can check that out, of course, is the Caverns of Time instance, where, you know, you're breaking Thrall out of Dernhold Keep. That's all part of the Lord of the Clans story. Obviously, you've got the Infinite Dragonflight involved, but you should totally check out that book if you want to see that part of Thrall's backstory, because it's actually pretty intriguing. Moving on, though, this all kind of culminated in, you know, the Third War, the conflict at Hyjal, and that, again, Caverns of Time, if you go play through Hyjal, this is that period of history being played out over again.
We should mention something when we're talking about this.
Sure.
It was Jaina, by the way, who saved Grom Hellscream.
Yeah.
Jaina is the one who came up with the way to capture him when Thrall was like, we got to go get Grom back. And everyone else, even Karen, was like, why? He's kind of crazy. And Jaina was like, all right, if it'll get you on board, here's how we can do it. And I believe she's part of the reason they even got the Fel stuff out of him.
Yeah.
It's Jaina as well. So that's... Jaina is pretty instrumental in the ultimate liberation of the orcs from the Blood Curse, because without her, you don't get Grom back to his senses.
She basically left Arthas and left the Eastern Kingdoms and started to forge her own destiny, and it was a pretty substantial one. They fought in the Third War. They beat Archimonde. He was destroyed, and everybody lived. And Jaina took the remainder of her followers and she went and founded Theramore, because at that point it was like, okay, we've got this peaceful coexistence thing happening right now. Things aren't 100% okay, but they're all right. And maybe we can, you know, forge some alliances with the orcs and with the night elves and, you know, make things work. This is pretty good. And that's when Jaina's daddy showed up again. Joe, do you want to talk about that, or Rossi?
So, I mean, it's interesting because at that moment, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. It was, oh God, I can't even think of how to form it. I'm sorry.
Well, basically, I'll go until you get something.
Yeah.
The thing with Daelin Proudmoore showing up is, at first, Jaina was thrilled. She loved her father. She hadn't got to see him in a while, but she loved him. And him showing up, you know, at least, you know, she didn't know what had happened to Kul Tiras. And we still don't. We still to this day do not know what's going on.
Yeah, we have no clue.
It's a mystery.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened.
He showed up and at first she was like thrilled. And she's like, you know, it's so good to see you. She opened Theramore to him. And within like a very short amount of time, he basically kicked her out of her own city.
There's a generational difference going on here, because Daelin Proudmoore, he came from a time period in which the Alliance of Lordaeron was in heavy war with the orcs. He saw the opening of the Dark Portal. He lost his son to the orcs. So when he sees his daughter, his only child.
There's a little more to that, too. Even then, he directly opposed like the internment camps. He wanted them destroyed.
Yeah, he wanted them.
And that was a breaking point for him with the Alliance, too. Don't forget that.
And it was kind of a breaking point with Jaina a little bit, too. Yes. There was a point where she kind of started distancing herself a little bit from her father. I don't think it was a deliberate kind of thing, because obviously, you know, your magical daughter is living in Dalaran. You're not going to see her every day. But at the same time, they had two very distinctly different sets of values. And keep in mind that Theramore and Durotar both, they were both being founded at the same time, and they were being founded on the high of a victory against the Burning Legion, this incomprehensibly evil enemy from 10,000 years ago, and they fought it and they won. So naturally, these guys want to kind of work together, because obviously it worked really well when they were beating the Legion back. So Jaina's of this one mindset where she's seen, like, recently, so recently, that obviously orcs and humans can work together. Her dad shows up, and her dad hasn't seen any of this. He hasn't witnessed any of this. All he knows is these are the same green-skinned monsters as the ones that killed his son. And now his only other child wants to play nice with them. Oh, no, he's not going to lose two kids, and he's not going to let the orcs, you know, roam free. he's going to do what he should have been in his eyes done in the first place and eradicate these guys. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
Which one of us?
Either one of you. I'm doing a lot of talking, so I feel like I should shut up.
It seems appropriate. Go ahead. It seems appropriate on the Janna show. Joe, do you have that thing you wanted to say formulated?
Well, I mean, what I was going to say is like that moment of defiance at the end of that whole encounter is really the defining moment too, right? Like after everything that happened, not only did she stood up for her own beliefs at it, drawing on her experiences for everything that she's seen with the Scourge, the Legion, and deep in her heart knowing that it was vendettas that were going to be the undoing if they held to them, right? That the old hatreds have to be pushed aside. And she knew this clearly. And the defining moment of this whole conflict for me is where she actually helped them, the Horde, get ships and get out of there, including ordering her own troops to stand down. And that moment too, like that breaking moment, we're going to talk, like she turns to her father and just says, "Why didn't you listen?" And like, it's just that last tear, that last like rift in that relationship.
Janna is the Cassandra of WoW.
Yeah.
No matter what her position is, people don't listen to it.
Yeah.
It's like amazing how many times Janna has been, no, we can do this. Nope. No one will listen to her. Everything falls apart. And she's like, and they keep doing it over and over again. Even when she changes her position, it's like everybody else suddenly magically doesn't. It's like people who would totally burn Orgrimmar to the ground are suddenly like, no, we should be peaceful. What is? I'm sorry, but I find it frustrating.
It is. And I mean, it is especially frustrating, too, when you look at it. When you start taking the entire breadth of Janna as a character from her birth in the series all the way through to current, she has been at almost every single key moment that we as players have lived through, from Warcraft, the RTSs up to current, she's been there. She has a unique perspective that a lot of other characters do not have. She has insight into events that shaped the current world, and she knows what's going on more so than most other people. I mean, look at the list of NPCs that or characters that are alive now that have those same experiences. They're very far and few between, or how many are still active.
It's a short list.
It's a very short list. And when you take that,
what's really interesting too, yeah, if you to point out what you're saying, the current head of the Kirin Tor was gone for the entirety of the Third War.
Yep.
He was in Outland. He was stranded in Outland.
Janna was here for it. Janna
on the front lines,
fighting alongside the Horde. She actually has like experienced what they're like as an ally. It's really interesting.
And she's also interacted with some of the most important figures of the past, too, even before her time. We talked about how she, you know, she met Medivh at one point. She met Eowyn.
She did. And I feel like I want to go back to that whole moment in Theramore with her father, because that was also another kind of turning point there, where her own father was unwilling to listen to her. Her own father was unwilling to, like, give her the respect.
You know not what you speak of, girl.
Right. And she was trying to tell him, look, we beat back the Burning Legion with their help. Like, we helped these guys. They helped us. Azeroth wouldn't be here if we weren't working together. And again, like I said, I think that there's just a generational divide there, because Daylan, he was very much from that Warcraft 1, Warcraft 2 generation, where that was what he knew, was that conflict and the face of orcs. That's what he knew. That was the face that he recognized. Janna didn't really, she was born after that at, you know, to a degree. She was raised, she grew up in a stage after the Second War was over, after that had been resolved. So the only face of orcs that she's seen is Thrall and his
and
kind.
People in camps too.
And the internment camps, the orcs in the internment camps, you know, this is how she was raised. This is what she witnessed. So it's two very key different experiences here. And Janna could see one future where everybody needed to work together, because obviously if that Burning Legion, which she witnessed firsthand, she saw them, she saw what they were capable of. It was monstrous. It was terrible. It took a guardian coming in and intervening for them to actually succeed in, you know, if if Medivh hadn't been there and Medivh hadn't brought all of these people together, there would be no Azeroth. The Legion would have won. There's no way the Nyelves could have withstand against him on their own, period. So Jaina's working with this knowledge that, yes, these people need to work together. And her father's coming in and very much saying, no, that's not how the world works, Jaina. And she's like, well, no, it's not how the world worked with you, but it is how it's working now. And her father refused to listen. She had no choice at that point. She really had no choice, because if she had just, like, let her father live, then that would have been treason against Kul Tiras, for one thing. And I don't think that that really would have been looked over very favorably. As it stands, though, the reason why Kul Tiras is such a mystery right now is because the last Kul Tiras heard of the outside world was that Grand Admiral or Lord Admiral Daelin Proudmoore sailed across the sea to go visit his daughter in Theramore, and he was never heard from again. That's it.
Well, he was like, it's weird too, because you can't tell if he was just visiting or if there was something going on.
Yeah.
Like he brought a military fleet with him.
And he did.
Very much felt like it could have been an escaping situation, but they never clarified it. They never clarified it.
And as far as Kul Tiras itself, we've heard nothing. Absolutely nothing. The little remnants of Kul Tiras Navy that you see, you know, scattered around the world in World of Warcraft, those are remnants of those people that came over with Daelin Proudmoore and with Jaina. They aren't from Kul Tiras itself.
The ones that won't, like, they basically wouldn't go in with Theramore afterwards. That's basically it. There was, like, a few of them in Durotar. Like, I want to say there was, like, a little base right near Orgrimmar.
Yeah, there was a little holdout base of Kul Tiras loyalists who... Yeah, they were not happy with Theramore. They were not happy. Well, obviously, they weren't happy with Theramore. They weren't happy with Jaina. Jaina engineered her own father's demise. And the thing is Jaina did not want to do that. I mean, her heart was broken there. But at the, you know, she had that loyalty to her father. She had that loyalty to Kul Tiras. But that was being balanced against everything that she'd already witnessed, like all of the stuff that was going on with the Scourge, all of the stuff that was going on with the Burning Legion. And when she weighed the two of them together, one of them carried a lot more weight, and it was not the ground that her father was standing on.
Yeah, well, because as you pointed out, it wasn't just a situation where she had to oppose him. He'd come in and deposed her. Like, he'd put her in a position where that was her settlement. She started it.
It was, her group.
Yeah, it wasn't. They weren't Kul-Tirians. They were like people from. There were people from Gil-Nayas in that group. There were people from all over Lordaeron in that group. They weren't just they weren't his people to command in the first place. And he deposed her and basically put her in a position where, if she didn't do something, people she'd allied with previously would be attacked unawares. And that goes down like Rexxar's in Theramore when they order him captured and killed, and she has to make a call. And it's very much a. I'm forced to do this. It's not a, I've always wanted to get rid of the old man, but it's very much, I can't let you do this. It's funny how many times Jaina comes up against, I can't let you do this situations.
Or I can't watch you do this, that kind of thing. Anyway, moving on, obviously this set the stage for Jaina to be the diplomat, the one that we recognized in World of Warcraft, the one that wanted to get along with the orcs, the one that wanted to. And again, Joe, I know you brought it up. Over that period of time, that stretch of time where, Theramore and Durotar, they were at relative peace. Like, they didn't out and out fight each other or anything. They were kind of wary of each other. But Thrall and Jaina spoke every now and again, fairly regularly.
There was a 3-year period of relative peace, I think, there.
Yeah, something like that. And in the course of all of this stuff that was going on, Jaina discovered that there was an area in Thunder Ridge an area on the far side of Mulgore. It was basically in the Eastern Kingdoms there, or not in the Eastern Kingdoms,
so,
in Kalimdor.
So basically she got approached by Thrall to relocate the herd of Thunder Lizards that were displaced by a logging operation on Thunder Ridge. If you haven't seen them, Thunder Lizards are really, really annoying. And if you play now in the starting area, you're going to be swimming and trying to discharge their electric land so that they don't electrocute anybody.
They're big electric stegosauruses.
Yes, and they're absolutely awful. So during this time, she was actually going to try to mass teleport them to a unpopulated region on the far side of Mulgore. And that's when she discovered, accidentally, that the area was magically warded. Why was it warded? Well, it had to protect the single inhabitant, Aegwynn. The only person, that's where Aegwynn had been hiding for all of this time.
After all of that stuff that went down with Medivh, she'd been kind of hidden away. Yeah. And living in isolation, self-imposed isolation for the most part. She was perfectly happy to be living on her own. She didn't really want visitors, nor did she really want...
Oh, and she was not happy either, because Jaina was the you know, fangirl. She was like, oh my God!
Jaina was like, hard eyes, and yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you're actually alive and standing right in front of me. This is the most amazing thing ever. And Aegwynn's just like,
rolling her eyes and like, go away, kid. Go away, kid.
Please.
You have no idea.
Well...
The interesting thing here too is that encounter allowed for a filling in of gaps, right? Like Aegwynn filled in the gaps of everything that had happened from her perspective and what was still happening in the world, particularly with Theramore and Durotar with I think it was something, it was a demon with a Z name.
It's Modlor.
Yeah, there he is. That was the guy behind, like, bringing back the Burning Blade clan.
He was a minor demon. He wasn't, like, a major agent of the Burning Legion or anything. He was a minor demon, but he was powerful enough.
He was enough to put he was enough to put people against each other.
And he was enough to actually, like, take care of Aegwynn, because the thing is about Zmodlor is, well, the thing about Aegwynn at that point, Aegwynn had expended the majority of her power helping her son, helping Medivh. Giving him a second chance, giving him the opportunity to come back, unite all these people, redeem himself, and the Burning Legion threat. So she wasn't working with her full scale guardian powers at this point. She was working with maybe like a fraction of them.
I mean, still powerful by any means.
Still powerful, but she was no longer eternally young because she couldn't maintain that whole eternally young thing anymore. You know, there was only so much that Aegwynn could do. So at the end of all of this, in which obviously, you know, Jaina and Aegwynn, they were successful in taking down Zmodlor and, you know, peace was saved or whatever. It wasn't really saved. It was just, it was back to where it was, that sort of wary, I know you're there and you know I'm there and we're not going to work together, but we're not going to be super aggressive towards each other either.
Well, it was a non-aggression pact. It was basically right. What it was. It was like, we're not going to be friends. We're going to be neighbors that don't bother each other. It's
right.
You stay on your side of the fence. I'll stay on my side of the fence and never the two shall meet.
And Aegwynn said, okay, kid, I'll come back with you. And she went back to Theramore and pretty much served as Jaina's chamberlain. Almost.
Well, there's a little like more advisor. In there too. Yeah, well, what wound up happening is when Jaina and Aegwynn came back to Theramore, Jaina's current chamberlain was corrupted by the Burning Blade. And so basically they had to, that was part of that whole process of taking out Zmodlor.
There was a job opening in Aegwynn.
And there was a job opening. And then Aegwynn was like, you know what, I'll stay around. And for those that don't know what a chamberlain is, it basically is like the ranking officer of a household or monarch or noble's estate that manages everything, all the minutiae instead of the noble when the noble's away doing things. So that's kind of an important role for anybody to have, let alone this iconic person from history who, you know, is probably one of the few that has seen as much stuff go down as Jaina has at this point.
So this all sets the stage for what we see in World of Warcraft. This all sets the stage for everything that Jaina was right up until Wrath of the Lich King. This also sets the stage for the person that Jaina was in Wrath of the Lich King. And I know a lot of people kind of make fun of Jaina because it seems like she's crying all the time, like throughout the thing. But you have to understand that when she sees the Lich King, it's not just the Lich King. It's the most terrifying being in creation on Azeroth, and it's wearing her dead lover's face. It's wearing the face of her former fiance. It's wearing the face of the man that she loved. And she doesn't know if there's any vestige of that man left in that thing or not. And a lot of Jaina's struggle in Wrath of the Lich King is that struggle with trying to temper her emotions with what she knows must be done. Obviously, the Lich King has to fall, but she's still kind of holding out for this hope that maybe there's some way to redeem him, and maybe she'll get Arthas back someday. And obviously, that didn't play out. So you have Jaina again with a broken heart. But throughout all of this, Jaina wasn't working against the Alliance. Jaina was trying to work with the Alliance and with the Horde and bring them together. What she wanted to see was an alliance, a diplomatic alliance. And she kept trying to make this happen with Varian Wrynn. And Varian wasn't really on board with it because Varian watched his father's heart ripped from his chest by an orc. Like, Varian was very much, he's like, yeah, no, I don't think so. He wasn't quite from her father's period of history.
Her father's period of history is very much people who fought the Horcs directly and therefore had a knee-jerk reaction towards them.
Right.
Daelin had lost his son. Daelin was very angry. But Daelin lost his son in battle.
Right.
You that happens. You know, you lose people in battle.
Varian lost his father.
Varian was a 10-year-old who walked into the throne room and saw his father get his heart cut out by someone that he'd personally extended himself to. Grona had been welcomed into the household.
She was a friend. She was considered a friend. So Jaina had a lot working against her, obviously. But that's why when you see Jaina in World of Warcraft, when you see her in, you know, when you see her right up until Wrath of the Lich King, right up until Cataclysm, really, when you see her trying to be this proponent for peace, that's why the entirety of her life is kind of built up to this series of events. And one of the most pivotal events in her lifetime was witnessing orcs and night elves and tauren and humans all working together to beat back this pervasive, terrible threat. And then we get, Garrosh Hellscream in the mix. And yeah, Joe or Rossi, you want to cover Garrosh and what happened to Theramore? Because that's a doozy.
Joe's plays Horde. He should have to do it.
You're gonna make me do that. I don't like reliving this moment.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the destruction of Theramore, because that's what it was. So this is probably one of the most grievous things that we've experienced as players in the game. And this is beyond all plagues, beyond everything else. This is when Garrosh decided that it was time to wipe Theramore and the humans' existence from Kalimdor, because, well, why should they be there? This is our land. They didn't want this to begin with. We should make them go away. And I'm oversimplifying.
And I feel like we should point out that the whole reason that Garrosh was in the position where he could make this kind of decision in the first place was because Thrall appointed him leader when he left.
Yeah, he basically built him up and then like, here you go. You're good. You're in charge now. And so you're given a warlord, like basically control of an entire nation, an entire people, and that's what he's going to do. Is he's going to approach it like a warlord. He's going to approach it like somebody who, you know, needs to handle things in a militaristic way. And this comes after, I believe it was shortly after Garrosh invaded Ashenvale Forest. Theramore's forced to abandon the truce, but what wound up happening here is that Garrosh went to, and I can't remember his name, he was part of the Kirin Tor before, the Blood Elf Mage. Crud. I can't remember his name.
Aethys? No. Which one was it, Rossi?
Which one are we talking about again?
The one that created the bomb.
Oh, Thalion Songseeker?
Thank you.
So he went to Thalion and he's like, hey, we need this taken care of. And Thalion's like, yeah, I got an idea. I can make this thing that is a weapon of mass
destruction. Sure, I'll make it work.
And so they use this arcane energy, this bomb, and it is actually like a atom bomb in fantasy game terms, where they drop it from a goblin zeppelin, basically using the focus. I think it was the focusing iris, wasn't it? I think it was the focusing iris that had been turned into the bomb. And they dropped it on the city, destroying all of the Alliance defenders, a lot of people. And I mean, I don't want to say thank you for this, but killing Ronan in the process as well. As Ronan tries to stay behind to get everybody else out so that, you know, as many survivors can be there as
that moment. And all of this plays out in Tides of War. Again, you can pick that one up. That's also by Christy Golden. Golden is really good at writing Jaina. Like, I think Jaina was kind of almost her baby in a way. Cause all of the novels, I think, that have involved Jaina Proudmoore, Golden's been the one who's addressed it. Yeah, it was the focusing iris. It was stolen from the Nexus, and Caligos showed up to try and find it. Because he knew that it was gone. He didn't know where it had gone. And obviously, you know, things didn't play out the way that they they didn't play out in a very good way. And I feel like we should note that, yeah, Ronan died. Okay. Ronan died because he was shielding the city and trying to get people out of there. Jaina was there and she refused to leave. And at the last possible second, he basically shoved her through a portal and said, nope, you need to live.
Well, it wasn't just her either, too. It was it was Viresa, Chandris, her, and Caligos.
Yeah. But he basically punched her through a portal on her own and said, yep, get out.
And
stayed
and
took the brunt of the blast himself.
And how close it was, too, is I believe it was before the portal closed, there was still the wash of the arcane energy.
Yeah, it
which
was
is
like
what turned her,
second.
Which was what turned her eyes and her hair white.
Right. She was affected by the blast. And of course, what does she do? She immediately returns to Theramore. And what does she find? She finds the shattered ruins of the nation that she'd spent all this time building up. And everything that she had ever worked for in her life was destroyed in that second.
And I gotta say, man, every time I read that, I always come upon the part where her brand new apprentice.
Oh God, Kindy Sparkshine. Yeah. That makes me cry every time. Jaina snaps, really, for want of a better word. But is it really any wonder that she did? Because everything that she spent her life working towards and fighting for, and that one bright, shining future that she saw reflected, you know, in that first assault against the Burning Legion, that successful one, the one at Hyjal, it was all destroyed in an instant. And everyone she had ever known, all of the people that she had brought to shelter, all of the people that she had kept safe all of this time, they were gone. And there was nothing she could do about it. And any spark, that spark of the diplomat that kind of lived in her, that wanted to work with the Horde, it pretty much died that day. And is it any wonder that it died, really? You know, in the face of what happened, there's no way any reasonable person would say, oh yeah, no, we still need to work with these guys. No, she was done. And the one thing that you really don't want to do is you don't want to tick off Jaina Proudmoore. Because what did she do immediately after that? She took the elements of the ocean itself. Like she went to Dalaran, demanded retribution. Dalaran said, nope. She stole some, what was it?
The Focusing Iris?
The Focusing Iris. She stole stuff, and I think she stole like an incantation or something from Dalaran. I can't remember. Anyway, she essentially called the oceans to her, and she planned to just pretty much drown the entirety of Orgrimmar. That's where she was at. That's where her headspace was at. And again, I don't think that anybody could blame her. Caligos, in the meantime, had formed kind of a bond with Jaina. And that seems to be kind of the MO for Caligos, is he likes to form attachments to magical creatures or things like that.
We're going
to
talk about that.
I don't think we need to go into it too much, but because we need to actually start wrapping it up, because it's been longer than an hour now. And yeah.
In case you guys are wondering, talking about Jaina Proudmoore will easily take you an hour and a half.
It will. Absolutely. But what we need to look at here is that the point in Jaina's life where all of this fell apart is also the point where she changed in a very pivotal kind of way to being for this whole diplomacy between the factions, to being very thoroughly against it. Because obviously, you know, in that second where everything that she had known and loved just kind of fell apart, and it was at the hands of Thrall. Really? I mean, where else could you put the blame for that? He was the one who put Garrosh at the head of the Horde. You know, he put him in this kind of position of power, and look at what he did with it. And then Thrall had the gall to show up and try and convince her not to, like, destroy Orgrimmar, that there was, like, a better way. And she listened. I don't think she liked it, but she listened. But that kind of shaped, that was that pivotal moment that shaped Jaina into the character that she is now. And now that she's dead set against the Horde, all of a sudden everybody else wants to work with them again.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's the whole harbinger of the, we have to work together in order to defeat the Legion. The Legion is the ultimate evil. And she's like, I don't know about that. I've seen genocide at the hands of mortals. Like, Everything I want has been everything I've wanted as far as peace has been shattered. I wanted to live a happy existence in my little island and in my tower and kind of do things like in a peaceful manner and not bother anybody. But I don't know. Maybe we can do this without them. How's that?
And what's kind of interesting about Jaina's role is that Jaina has morphed from that, you know, voice of optimism and that voice of diplomacy into her father. She doesn't want to have anything to do with the orcs. She doesn't want to have anything to do with the horde. She thinks that all of them should be shoved out. There is no working with them as far as she's concerned. And, you know, they can sit there and go, oh, hey, no, because, you know, the Legion is far more important. We need to beat the Legion. And all she can do is look back at history and go, yeah, I helped them and I worked with them to beat the Legion. And guess how I was repaid? Guess what happened to me? How can you say this? You can say this in the moment, but afterwards there will be a reckoning and it's not going to be on our side.
And I think that's one of those important moments too. And we talked about this briefly before too. Mm-hmm. She's not the only one that feels that way. Even in the voting, and this is spoilers for anybody who hasn't played Legion yet, which, I mean, if you're listening to this, really? Okay.
Come on, you should be.
When the option is presented, when you go with Khaegar and you say, we're going to work together, and you bring this to, you know, the Council in Dalaran, and she sits there and she says, I cannot do this. We need to, this can't happen. And then Khaegar says, well, we should vote on this. Everybody should have an equal say. And it's not just her. There's another mage.
It's not a unanimous vote.
It's not a unanimous vote at all. And we don't know anything happened beyond that, but there could be more repercussions because of that, because it seemed kind of out of place almost. But she's not the only person that feels that way. She's not the only one that's lost everything to the hands of the Horde. She's not the only one that sees the atrocities or has seen as all the death and destruction that she has. And yeah, the Legion is a huge threat, but she also looks at what they have at their disposal and is pretty sure that they can take care of it.
We're making it sound like she was completely unreasonable when the Legion showed up this time.
She wasn't.
And she wasn't. She straight up, she put it aside. She was like, all right, I will work with them then. And she goes to the island with Varian and Ghen, and she, you know, they fight alongside the Horde, and she doesn't make an issue of it. She doesn't complain.
She works
with
them.
Everything falls apart. And from her perspective, what does she see?
She
sees the Horde pull out.
Yep. Once again. And this time, she loses Varian.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Is it any wonder, you know, and obviously, you know, she and Varian, they were never romantically, you know, entwined or anything like that, but they were of the same generation and they had an understanding, and Varian didn't always agree with Jaina, but he respected her.
She was often the only one who could rein him in.
Yeah, she really, when he was like at his ragiest, she was the only one who could kind of calm him down.
And well, not only that, but he was a symbol too, right?
Yeah.
Like, in his calmer moments, like, he's the one that forced the Council of Three Hammers. He's the one that quelled a lot of debate. And when he got his head right, when he wasn't the furious rage monster anymore, he became a unifying factor for the Alliance. He became that figurehead that person that tied everything together, and she sees that lost, right? She sees the Horde condemn the Alliance with one final blow, a deliberate action in her mind. How is she going to react to that? This is a people that have been struggling for years. Look at all of the expansions we've been through. Look at all the stories of the Alliance and bringing Gilneas back into the fold, bringing out the reason everything works, at least as well as it does, is because Varian is willing to sit there and say, you're dumb, shut up and listen to me, or you guys need to stop fighting, we need to do this, or you're going to do nothing but give our enemies the opportunity to destroy everything we hold dear. He becomes a voice of reason, and now she watches that voice of reason die at their hands. That her people, the people that she's committed her life to, that her family committed their lives to multiple times, gone in that one moment.
And yeah, so when Khaegar then comes to her and says, no, we need to let them back into the Curantor again. We need to let the Blood Elves back in. She has that moment where she goes, are you kidding me? Because the whole reason that she kicked those Blood Elves out of the Curantor was because they allowed someone into Darnassus to basically find the Divine Bell, which was a weapon of untold power, and take it back to Garrosh. They turned on, as far as Jaina was concerned, they turned on the very neutrality that the Kirin Tor stood for and sided with the Horde. And she was like, no, we're not. No, we're going to stand with the Alliance. You're done. Get out. And it was vicious. It was absolutely vicious what she did, because she didn't just like kick them out. She flat out had people killed in the streets. She really didn't care at that point, because she had seen what Garrosh could do with one weapon. She didn't want another one to fall into his hands. And the Blood Elves had decided to let that happen. And she didn't care about the circumstances. She didn't care whether or not people were forced. She didn't care what the reasoning was. All she cared was that Theramore had been destroyed by something of massive proportions, and Garrosh looked like he was winding up for another strike. So the mage formerly known as Bjork is the person who initially sent us this question and said, do you think Jaina could be trying to find a weapon to fight the Burning Legion? I absolutely think that she is. I don't think that she has it in her to just let the world burn. I think she's looking for something, someone who will listen to her, maybe, or something so powerful that maybe she doesn't need anyone to listen to her. Maybe she can just become that woman that Aegwynn was and save the whole dang world on her own, because nobody else is listening. And I don't know what you guys think on that, but we really do need to wrap it up here. So I'm going to ask you what you think in light of everything that we've just covered and Jaina as a character. What do you think is the most logical thing for Jaina to be doing at this point? Do you think she's looking for a weapon for the Burning Legion? Rossi?
That would certainly make sense. They've been like, there's been absolutely nothing, and it's kind of disturbing. Like, it does make me fear that they've just going to straight up not have her show up again this whole expansion. And that would be like kind of nuts, but I don't know. I keep coming back to Ilganoth, and I really hope that's not what they're going to do. But the whole, her heart is a crater and we have filled it.
Yeah.
Imagine if she did find some place, like, there's lots of places where the, you know, the old gods were.
And we have kind of, you know, we've speculated on who the Her Ilganoth is that he could be talking about. Because he could be talking about Jaina. He could be talking about Azeroth, because Azeroth has been referred to as a she. He could be talking about, I mean, there's any number of characters, but Jaina does fit that bill. And yeah, it is kind of distressing.
I really don't want that to happen.
And neither do I.
Because I feel it would be a waste of such a great character. It really would. And I mean, honestly, I would, and it would make sense to what Rossi's saying, because if she's searching for a powerful, you know, artifact or weapon or something to fight the Legion, what's not afraid of the Legion? The Void isn't afraid of the Legion. So she starts dabbling in that sort of area. Maybe they crept in, and we've seen what the old gods, what the Void does with people who have hate and fear in their heart, with people who are so broken, whether they've lost a son, a loved one, just one person, and how easily they were, you know, corrupted or taken with the best intentions, right? Like they thought they were doing what was best, and then their heart is just completely not their own anymore. Their actions are not their own. I could see that happening to her. I don't want it to happen to her. What I would love to see happen is I would love to see her be the turning point in a losing battle. I would love to see her come in at the head of a fleet of Kul'tira ships that she has resurrected, or that she has put back together, that she has been spending this time amassing, being the mage pirate queen, you know, coming in at the last minute to defeat, you know, to strike the definitive blow that turns the tide in our favor at our darkest moment, and then leaves. And, you know, she turns that tide and then says, I've done anything I was obligated to do for you. You're on your own now. You know, that would be the final moment of, if she has to leave the story in some way, let her go out strong. Let her not become a toy to the plot. Let her be that moment where she gives us that one final grace, that one final saving grace, despite everything we have forced her through as players. And this is both sides at this point. And then she, you know, becomes this thing that won't deal with any of us, you know, and I could deal with that. I could deal with something like that. And honestly, that's what I would prefer.
And I think that she's too strong for the old gods to just kind of slip in and have their way. I don't think that Jaina is the type. I would be tremendously disappointed if that was what happened to her after all of this, because I think that she's got the strength to be something extraordinary. And I also think that, you know, as she was living in Theramore and as all of this stuff was going on, as the shattering happened and everything else, she formed this relationship and this bond with Anduin where it was almost like she was his older sister or his aunt, that kind of a familial sort of connection with him. He's lost his father. I don't think that she would necessarily leave him to stand on his own like that. And I would like to see her come back in some kind of advisory capacity or something. I would like to see her, you know, own her strength, recognize her strength, and not use it for, you know, this path of destruction or whatever, but use it in a big, I've shown up, I've saved you guys. And yeah, you know, Joe, what you were saying, you know, if she showed up and she just said, okay, I saved you guys, I'm done. See you later, you're on your own. And sailed off into the sunset, I guess I'd be okay with that too. But the thing is like they spent so much time developing Jaina as a character that she's kind of become a person in her own right. And I still want to see, because I feel like she's still got places that she could go.
Oh, she absolutely could. And I agree with that. I would rather have her do either of those options, come back and take the place as an advisor, or have the opportunity to come back later. You know what I mean? Like, have that moment and establish yourself as a superpower and, you know, come back later on, maybe when we're traveling to Argus, maybe, you know, whatever happens after that. But I do not want to see her become the villain and us have to take her out. That is, if that happens, I will legitimately cry.
Yeah. All right. So on that note, which is kind of a downer of a note, but we've kind of gone over by like a substantial degree, so we need to go ahead and wrap this up. Bjork, I hope that kind of answers your question, maybe with a lot more depth than you were looking for, but Jaina's kind of fascinating. So, you know, we could spend all of this time talking about her. She's a pretty cool character. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, the listeners of Blizzard Watch and Lore Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. This includes a lot of the books that we talked about today. So Arthas, Tides of War, The Shattering, I believe all of those have audiobook selections that are available on Audible. And you can choose that as your free download if you want to check out that novel without actually, you know, sitting down reading it. You can listen to it while you're on the road, while you're on your way to work. Go for it. They're good books. Anyway, you can download many of Blizzard's titles as well as many others. They've got a sizable selection. Just go to blizzardwatch.com/audible and sign up for your free 30-day trial. And as always, if you've got a question that you'd like us to talk about or a subject you'd like us to talk about on Lore Watch, please feel free to email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just include Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know which podcast it's intended for. And that pretty much wraps us up. So final thoughts on Jaina Proudmoore. Rossi?
She needs to come back. It's absurd that she hasn't been in this expansion. If you wanted to have Khadgar be the head of the Karan Tor, I guess that's fine. But the fact that we haven't seen or heard or anything from her means that we really need to have her in 7.2. It's just, yeah, she needs to come back.
Joe, same question. Thoughts on Jaina Proudmoore?
I echo Rossi, and I add many expletive deletives to the fact that she hasn't been in the story yet.
As for myself, there are two characters that are going to be given an extreme disservice if they are not included in this expansion at all whatsoever. One of them is Jaina Proudmoore. The other one is Rathian. Both of them tie into the storyline in such a direct manner that it just feels strange that they are not included.
Rathian engineered the whole Siege of Orgrimmar.
He engineered the Siege of Orgrimmar, yeah. But the other thing that he engineered...
He did it because of
what's happening right now, so it seems weird that he's not available. Jaina is arguably the one person, the one human being in history who should absolutely be here at the second coming of the Burning Legion, because she was there at Hyjal. Khadgar wasn't there. So what does he know, really? I mean, come on. Come on, guys. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.